Hey, how are you? Thanks for listening to another edition of the On Fire podcast brought to you by NBC7. I am Darnay Tripp, joined by a guy who has something in common with Fernando Tatis Jr., as we were just discussing a second ago. Some mild shoulder discomfort.
Yeah, I'm not sure how mild mine is, but hopefully his is a lot better than mine.
It sounds that way, and no offense, Derek, I think ourselves and everybody listening would rather you be the one with slightly more discomfort than the $340 million man.
As would I. I will gladly sacrifice my shoulder for Fernando Tatis Jr. to have a healthy show. In fact, if I had a good one, I'd trade shoulders with him.
Well, we certainly hope that you get your ailment sorted out, because that does not sound like a whole lot of fun. We're going to discuss Tatis. We're going to discuss the return of Lamet. And then we have a great guest today as well. I'm super excited to talk about Rob Friedman, the man behind Pitching Ninja. Before we get started, want to show some love to OG's. OG's has begun opening up their locations. You can still order from them online or call OG's in your neck of the woods. You can also purchase OG's gift cards. It's a great way to support immediately, but you can cash it in at a later date. Add to-go alcohol to your order as well. It is OG's 30th anniversary year. Keep an eye out for different promotions and the specials they'll be offering throughout the year. A couple big topics this week, Derek. One we knew was on the horizon, which was Lamet. Let's start with Tatis, because obviously concerning, very alarming Tuesday when he walks off the field. And as we know with these injuries, how much stock can you put into the first diagnosis? You know, it's easy to wonder, especially after what happened September, or to at least fear for the worst in these situations. But from the sounds of things, something that he's dealt with through the years, something he's managed, felt that twinge of discomfort. Tingler described it as a pinch or a stinger of some sort. If it's September, October, probably ignores it, plays through, and is totally fine. But again, I think gave everybody a bit of a scare on Tuesday afternoon.
If by a bit of a scare you mean stomach jumped into throat, then yes, it was a bit of a scare. But I liked what Jace said, that he's being very mature. He's making sure that he knows this is Cactus League play. Felt a little bit, you know, let's go ahead and get out of here. I tell my kids, like, listen, you can go ahead and just let this heal and be out for 2 weeks, or you can try and screw around and play through it and be out for 3 months. He's doing the exact same thing. Let it heal, be okay, move on to when the games actually count. So that's, I like that Jace is saying, hey, he's being mature about this. He's being proactive about this. I don't think it's anything you have to really worry about, especially with the way they were going. Yeah, he's kind of dealt with it since he was in the minor leagues. It'll probably be a chronic thing for his whole life. It almost reminds me of like NFL players. You talk to NFL players and they have pretty much, especially linemen, after every season, they have cleanup surgeries. You know, they go, oh, I got to go in and get this cleaned up, get this trimmed up. You know, I tore this thing here, and so I got to get looked at, whatever it is. It might be the case for a guy like Tatis, where every year he has a little thing, you know, go and get a scope, just clean something up a little bit, and he's completely good to go the next year. Hoping that's the case. Sounds like that's the case. Being 22 certainly helps. Being 22 and in peak physical condition doubly certainly helps. So I'm just making myself not think about the worst case scenario, but I'm thinking, okay, it seems like he's fine. Athletes go through this stuff. He'll be good.
Yeah, I guess my question, I have a couple questions. I would love to know, because Tingler was asked this and didn't have the answer, and you could understand why. It's probably something only Tatis knows. Is like, what's the root cause? When did this start? Did you make an awkward play? Or maybe it was something that happened away from baseball where he did something funny to his shoulder and kind of felt it ever since. And never totally got right. So where did this all begin? Because we know, as Tingler said, it's something he dealt with through the minors, but it could have happened when he was a teenager, maybe even younger than that. And the other question is, what does it actually look like to maintain this, to make sure it doesn't become more of an issue? And Tingler mentioned strengthening all the muscles around the shoulder and just all the treatment and stuff that you referenced that athletes have to do. And that's another thing Jay said, is like, there's a lot of guys that have a lot of these types of issues that you never hear about because they just deal with it and it's not serious enough to keep them out for more than a game or two here or there. So I guess those are the big questions that I have going forward. One, just out of curiosity, like the history of the deal. And then two, How does that look going forward, and what do they need to do to make sure that doesn't become the type of situation where it is keeping him out of extended periods of games?
The best you can do is keep an eye on it, right? Keep an eye, make sure it doesn't get worse or too out of control or too bad, because once a situation goes past, there's always a tipping point with any injury, right? Where you get to that point, you're going, okay, we can still walk this back, like what they're doing with the Nelson Lamet. You can walk this back and it'll be okay, but if it goes past this point, now we're talking about something that's, I don't want to say catastrophic, but takes a lot more treatment, right? And you're out for a lot longer. So it's really figuring out where's that line. You know, I mean, a lot of people thought, I thought it might have re-aggravated it on that, you know, head first dive score and I'm a pop up, you know, right behind second base. Maybe he fell hard and that kind of, you know, knocked it loose a little bit, or whatever the aggravation is in there. It could be an impingement. Could be any number of things. Could be a little bone spur nobody's seen yet. Who knows what it is, you know? And maybe it was that dive that kind of re-aggravated what's going on. But as long as you can stay on top of it and he's okay to play through it and it doesn't hurt the ability to get the top hand over on the 98-mile-an-hour fastball up and he still hits it with authority, then he's going to be fine and he'll deal with it, pop a couple of ibuprofen and get out of shortstop.
Do you expect – he was lobbing to get in the game Wednesday night as we record Thursday. You expect to see him before April 1st? You know Tatis wants to be out there, but we also know how cautious the Padres have been.
I don't know. I think it's a question of timing and does he need it? And given his ability to, you know, come out of a coma and go 2 for 4, I don't think he needs it. So I would be surprised if he didn't get one more game, maybe a couple of at bats, you know, 5-6 innings, something in there. But I wouldn't be shocked if it went either way. If he got another game, if he got 3 more games, if he didn't see him again until, you know, opening day against the Diamondbacks and he's, you know, hitting second in the order against whoever the Diamondbacks throw out there. I neither one would surprise me at this point, because does he need the time? No. Does he want to stay sharp? Feels good? Sure, I could see him getting out there for a couple more ABs.
Yeah, I mean, you were right with your tweet after he hit the home run. Just put him in bubble wrap, put him in a case and shatter glass on opening day.
See, nobody listens to me, Darnay. I told you he's ready. Don't let him get hurt.
Let's touch on Lamet for a moment. I'm sure we'll get into him more with Rob, but your thoughts on what transpired Wednesday. It's always tricky with these spring training games because we can't always get a good look at what's going on. We were able to hear from Denelson Lamet afterwards, and he called it a success, you know, got out of it what he hoped. He wanted to feel good going into it, wanted to feel good coming out of it. Obviously, how he feels today is important, but it's not like this is his first time throwing 12 pitches. You know, he threw 2 innings, he said the other day. So what do we take from that, just kind of that step in the process, and where do you think we are just in that process of getting him ready to be in a major league regular season ball game, hopefully within few weeks or so? I don't know. I guess that's kind of the tricky part. Like, we don't expect him to be in the rotation at the start of the season, but when does that actually happen?
Well, if he comes out of it and he's fine today as we tape on Thursday and he's okay again on Friday, that's really encouraging. This is the shaky part now, right? And he got through the game, said he felt okay. So there wasn't I think what we were all fearing is the same, actually, against the Giants last year, the same vision that we had of him, you know, throwing a pitch and then calling the trainer out and then walking off the field. And we haven't seen him again in a game until, you know, Wednesday night.
Like what happened with Mike Clevenger when he came back.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what we were going, just get him through the game. He doesn't have to come out. Everything's good. Okay, he got through that. Okay, good. Felt good afterwards. Okay, good. So now we're in that kind of gray area of how does he really feel the next day? Because you can throw backfield games, you can throw against your teammates, you can throw. The adrenaline's not the same. And we've talked about that on this podcast. The adrenaline's not the same if you're facing guys wearing your uniform. Guys, you know, guys, you're not going to come high and tight to. Guys, it's just you're not putting the same strain on your arm when you're facing guys who are on a different team. Because you're really competing. So if he gets through this now, really, really positive. Probably gets another Cactus League start, probably by, if there's time. You know, we got a little bit more here. Maybe get him one on, I don't know, Sunday, Monday would be the last one. See if you can sneak him in. Other than that, he's going to start the season on the injured list. And start building the way everybody else has been building. If you figure that they're given, you, Darvish, Blake Snell, these guys, 5-6 starts total to get up. So if Lamet will have two, then you're probably looking at the, April 22nd, somewhere in their realm of him being able to be up again, if everything goes according to the timeline that he's on right now.
What do you make of, you talk about adrenaline, hit 98 on the gun.
Through the slider
twice, yep. through two changeups as well. Now, last year, he's throwing a slider, more than half of his pitches. So what is there anything to read into that? Is it, certainly good to see the velocity, but then kind of limiting how often he throws the slider. I guess that's something he's going to ease into as well.
Yeah, he's going to have to. And that's going to be the interesting thing that I'm most curious about with Nelson this year is how much does he rely on that slider? Because, it's a devastating pitch. A.J. Cassavell, friend of the On Fire podcast, wrote an entire article about just how good that pitch is and how devastating that pitch is and how good it was last year. And it really made him an elite, finish fourth in the Cy Young balloting, the National League type of pitcher. That is also potentially, it's a pitch that's hard on the arm. It just is. I don't care how big and strong you are. And Nelson Lamet's a big, strong man. It's going to put a strain on. So does he rely more on the fastball this year? Does he tinker more with the changeup this year? Does he maybe dial back the slider to 40% or make it just his put-away pitch? Is the fastball location and movement good enough for that to happen? That's going to be the curious thing about this year for me is how does he employ his arsenal? Because if he's good enough with just the fastball to get by and save that slider for when it's 1-2, okay, now it's good night time, that would be fantastic because that just helps the career, the career path stay even longer.
All right, Derek, we are joined by a guy who certainly could lend some insight into Nelson Lamet and what makes him so good as he tries to get back onto the field full time. And I have been looking forward to this conversation all week. We are joined by a guy who is behind what I think is one of the essential Twitter accounts. Like if you are a baseball fan,
agreed,
or somebody interested in baseball, you have to follow this Twitter account. It's Rob Friedman, the man behind Pitching Ninja. So great to have you on, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is great to be here, and I don't think I can live up to that intro. So. It's all downhill from here.
You better, man.
I know. It's so much pressure, dude. You can't do this to me.
Been hyping this up all week, so we're going to need you to deliver, Rob.
Oh, no. Here I go, disappointing people again.
There's so much we could get into with your background. I really want to hit on some Padres topics. I would point people towards the New York Times piece that came out not long ago about your background, which is really well done and lends some insight into how you got to where you are. The one question I had for you kind of along those lines is, for somebody who isn't necessarily like a baseball lifer, like in the industry, just how crazy it is for you to now have the bond that you have with pitchers. You're not just like a follower. Like there's lots of people that put videos on Twitter and stuff, but never actually interact with these guys. Like you've got Yu Darvish and Marcus Stroman, these guys like seeking out advice and kind of having that back and forth with you. What's that like to be in this position?
Like, I literally never thought that was going to happen. I've been a baseball fan, obviously played growing up. Everyone plays growing up and you imagine being a player. But it's sick. Like that is so cool to like whenever anybody reaches out. I mean, I consider those guys my friends. And I think vice versa. So like I'm there to provide support when they need it, help them bounce ideas off me and just, whatever. Like it's crazy. Like I never started this for that intent. You couldn't. Like how would you ever start anything and saying, this is what I'm gonna do? It didn't make any sense. But yeah, it's like it's this weird dream type thing that's just awesome. Like every day I wake up and if I get to talk baseball, that's great. So yeah, there's nothing better than that, right?
And what's awesome is people on the podcast can't see this, but you got a baseball in your right hand right now.
I do. Like
that's awesome.
So I think I was talking to Tyler Glass now about it, and it's like a fidget spinner. So it's like for baseball players and stuff, like I'll sit there with a baseball. Darvish did this the entire time I was talking to him. So he's sitting there, he's going through a splitter, like not demoing it. He is just feeling the baseball partly just because it calms him and partly because he comes up with new grips just sitting there going, yeah, that feels kind of good. Let me do this. So, I'm sitting here with a baseball.
What grip do you have right now?
It's just a random two-seamer. Well, probably go like 10 miles an hour too.
You mentioned Darvish, and that's obviously something I wanted to talk with you about because you had him on. And again, if you haven't watched that, listen to it, especially on YouTube, because like you mentioned, you get to see him and he's given many tutorials on different grips and different pitches. It was just really, really fascinating. What's your background with him? How did your kind of connection with him get started?
You know, I tweeted him a lot. I love him as a pitcher. I think he's great. I loved last year and the year before when he started putting his personality out there more. But he had actually reached, I don't DM anybody. Like, it's not my thing. I don't reach out to these guys because I figure that, you know, they want to be left alone and do whatever they want to do. It's always inbounds, and then it's establishing a relationship. He DM'd me out of the blue I forgot even what he started asking me. Like, there's one point where I was at dinner with my wife and she's like, can you put down your phone? I'm like, you Darvish is DMing me. I'm like, no, I can't put down my phone. I'm going to take advantage of talking to him. And then it just kept going on and on. Like, he would correct me if I got his pitch wrong. He would ask me for grips. He would do, like, he's just a good dude. Like, he's really a good dude. And, I think everybody should be a Yu Darvish fan. He's just a super dude.
And when you got a guy like that, I mean, for someone who is enamored with pitching, and this guy is like 11 actual like named pitches and probably like 30 or 40 we don't even know about, and he's able to deploy an arsenal like that. What's that like, just talking to a guy like that? And by the way, he comes over here and starts working with Hideo Nomo, who's with the Padres, and just picks up his splitter like that and just starts throwing not his splitter but Hideo Nomo's splitter in like 2 weeks time. It's almost like he's a pitching savant. When you get a chance to talk to a dude who has that kind of ability, that's got to be like a gold mine for you.
He literally is a pitching savant. So when he retires, he was talking to me and saying he wants to be a pitch grips coach. He doesn't want to be a pitching coach. He said he doesn't want to go out and make trips to the mound and all that stuff because he doesn't like the whole strategy stuff. But he thinks he can teach anybody pitch grips. And to your point, the splitter, like when I was talking to him, he can make his splitter move a bunch of different ways that he kind of undercounts his pitches. Cause I would count that splitter as, you know, an arm side splitter, a glove side splitter, a pure gyro splitter, whatever. Like, he can make that into three different pitches and then adding the Nomo splitter. So, he is absolutely a pitching savant and he thinks about grips so much. Like, literally, he's interviewing me and I teach a cutter. Like, I coach and I teach a cutter and I've taught a cutter pretty successfully. But he had me hold my hand up and move my fingers a certain way. And I'm like, wait, you just taught a cutter a totally different way than I would teach it. And it's amazing. Like, a light bulb, he said, do this. And a light bulb went off in my head. And I was like, whoa, that's sick. Like, he's thought all this stuff through. That's what he does. Absolutely amazing. And like, it was an honor to talk to him about his 11 pitches and maybe 14 if you want to, you know, extend it out. But yeah, that was crazy. And it was intimidating maybe at first. Like, I was like, I don't know how long this pitch grip segment's going to go. It might go on for hours. But we did it pretty efficiently. He was good, and I thought it went well.
I'm not going to ask you to name all 11 right now because that's
God, that would be tough. Yeah,
that gets tricky. Was it the splitter, the one where he was just kind of like changing his position of the thumb and it was manipulating like velocity and that sort of thing?
So he does that with his cutter, hard cutter and soft cutter and a medium cutter. And he does that basically the thumb is the gas pedal.
The three bears cutter. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was like, and that's so like, it became so intuitive talking to him that it made sense, and how he can change the shape of it by just changing his hand angle and then changing speeds by his thumb. But nobody thinks about that. Like, he's thought about pitching more than anybody, asks a lot of questions, has no ego about it. Like, he DM'd me during the season last year to get Shane Bieber's knuckle curve grip. And literally the next day, threw it in a bullpen, and the next outing, threw it in a game. And then he realized that it wasn't going to work perfectly well for him as a knuckle curve. So he switched it to a basically a spike slider. So he throws a spike slider, which is a new slider for him, on Shane Bieber's knuckle curve grip. And I'm like, how do you even come up with this? Like, he's, I mean, it's crazy.
It's some Island of Dr. Moreau type stuff going on with what he's trying to put pitch grips together. What I want to know is, how does Caratini call for them all? Because there's a finite number of fingers and body parts you can touch to call for a different pitch. Like, I don't even know how they put a system together to do this in the first place. Not even the Astros can keep up with the different signals that those two have together.
Is this a rated R podcast? Because I can give you some ideas, but it's I have no idea. That I did not ask. Like, how do you call this? I'd imagine some of it is, he has some discretion between a hard cutter and a soft cutter and stuff like that. Like, you'll call cutter and, you know, you have to deal with it where it's going to go. But that's a great question. I wonder how many signs they actually have, because that's brutal. Like, how do you even distinguish? Like, I really want you to throw your soft cutter, which is 3 miles an hour slower than your hard cutter right now. I mean, I he's an inventive dude. And I think some of it is done on the spur of the moment. I mean, look, last year he said he threw his best splitter while his glove fell off in mid-pitch. Like, what the heck's that? Like, unless you've done this a million different times, how do you do that? Like, that's not normal.
Not normal is a good way to describe. I mean, he throws lefty, you know. Tingler just talked about the freak athlete he is. You guys talked about, like, his fitness and conditioning and how much that has kind of helped. You're going to say something.
Yeah, exactly. So I asked him about throwing lefty, and I asked him about, like, he was talking about having different mechanics when he throws flat ground and how throwing lefty isn't a gimmick. It actually is a way for him to feel his body move better. And he feels like if he can throw a pitch lefty, then it's going to be way easier to throw it righty. So, like, he has reasons behind this. It isn't like just I'm goofing around doing stuff. He throws different mechanics off flat ground than off the mound, because he feels like basically neuroscience, your body is going to get bored if you do the same thing and you're not going to go to your fullest achievement. So by mixing up his mechanics, he can learn different parts about the way his body moves and take that to his mechanics in game day and improve himself. It's kind of like playing different sports, except he does that with different mechanics and different grips. And again, there's a reason for everything he does. And here, like, a lot of times we just train, and most people everywhere just train, like, I want to throw hard. I want to throw a curveball. Him, it's like, I want to have this exact shape and I want to borrow this guy's spin axis. And I need to figure out how to do that from just watching, you know, blah, blah, blah. Even sitting on the couch, he'll come up with things. Like, it's crazy, and he is, like, he's this baseball treasure, and y'all enjoy him while he's there. Like, he's just fantastic.
Have you done an overlay yet with all 11 to 14 of his pitches? Because that'd be a lot in the editing and the rendering process, but that would be pretty sweet.
Dude, I got asked to do that, and if you do it, like, as a true overlay with his mechanics and stuff, it comes out to be like one big blob of crap. So it's god awful. Like, you would have to, there are ways to do it. I'm not sure, like, I have to be in the right mood. I've done like 4 or 5 pitches and you can definitely see the way they'll break off. But doing that many, it takes some commitment. It takes a lot of commitment to do that. Be fun.
You mentioned his personality really starting to show the last year and a half. You talked about that a bit with you and how Anthony Rizzo kind of helped spark that, at least on the social media side. Part of the narrative since he got here is just how he himself as a pitcher has flourished in the last year and a half, and becoming more of himself and less what, you know, Major League Baseball pitchers feel like they need to pigeonhole a starter to be, throw lots of fastballs, that sort of thing. He's obviously had a fantastic career. He said it himself. He feels like he's at his best. What do you see?
100%. So this is the most underrated, one of the most underrated things when it comes to pitching in general, is the mental game and feeling comfortable on the bump and knowing that you can be yourself. Because too often coaches want to mold people into what they want them to be versus letting them be who they are. And especially, you can imagine coming over, you're not comfortable with your language. You want to listen to your coach. Like everybody's taught, you got to listen to your coach, but sometimes doing that boils out what makes you a special pitcher. And there's a fine line between coaching too much and coaching. And I think players, there's a fine line between owning your career and being uncoachable. So he is now comfortable with that because he's had success. I mean, you're not going to change what he does now because he nearly won a Cy Young last year. So he is 100% comfortable, which allows him. So they were trying to speed him up in between pitches to say, oh, if you had a better pace, you know, you'd be better. And he realized that, no, that's not right. He likes to think in between pitches, think one pitch at a time, think about executing and stuff. And slowing things down works for him. So by speeding him up, by coaching him to speed up, it wasn't allowing him to be his best. And by coaching him a certain way and not allowing, like, if it's like being in a workplace where you have a bad boss or somebody who takes all the fun out of your job, you can do your job, but you're not going to be as good at it. So now he's become more comfortable. It's very, like, his English is very good. And he can share. He's funny as crap. Like he did. He had that triple kill 2 years ago, where he hit the batter, home plate umpire, and the catcher. And I gave him an award for that. And his response was, "My bad." And I was like, "That's perfect." I give him, like, I have my dog's laying right here, but I named my dog Darvey because of him. Because of, like, he adopted a dog and I thought that it was awesome that he did, and I wasn't sure about getting one, so I got my dog. And I tell him, I named my dog Darvey, and he just stops for a second and goes, "I'm gonna name my dog Robbie." So I was amazing. Like, dude, that's great. Like, he's a funny, funny dude, and letting that show improves him on the mound. So San Diego's atmosphere, you have characters there. You have some great dudes. I mean, Blake Snell is a funny dude who always lets himself out. I mean, Clevenger is that guy too. Like there is no fakeness about him. He is who he is, and he will put it out there and let you know about it. I mean, I love that. I love that on a pitching staff. I think it enables pitchers to be their best. That's a long answer for good question.
That's a great answer.
No, but it's great because, I mean, Larry Rothschild has talked about that too. And you has given credit to the Cubs for letting him pitch the way that he's most comfortable pitching. Rothschild said, you know, you pitches backwards a lot of the time, whereas in America, you're told pitch off your fastball and go to your off-speed stuff. Darvish kind of has so many different things to throw at you that the 96 up is kind of the put-away pitch. And Larry said that it'd be a very bad idea for him to get in the way of that. So you got a guy who's had this much success, let him do what he does and don't try to make everybody do the same thing, because everybody's biomechanically different. Just like you talked about with the different, you know, cutter grips. What works for me is not going to work for you, is not going to work for Darnay, is not going to work for you, Darvish. We all have something different because of the way our body moves. There's a reason nobody else can throw Mariano Rivera's cutter.
Totally, totally agree. And not only that, but so we know that we can understand, I guess, that biomechanically everybody's different. So we have to allow them some degrees of freedom. You also mentally are different. Like, everybody can't be Corey Kluber or Kyle Hendricks and show no emotion, or be Max Scherzer and be a complete psychopath on the mound. There's a range. And by letting people figure out their own personality, their own biomechanics, their own pitch grips, fingers are different lengths. Some people's fingers are shaped differently. Talk to, like, Tyler Glasnow, his fingers are all, you know, he had carpal tunnel, so his fingers are shaped a little differently. Marcus Stroman's fingers are shaped a little differently. They can do different things with pitches. By copying their pitch grips, you're not going to have the same success. You're better served by looking at the axis of the ball that you want to imitate or something like that. But yeah, everybody's different. That's a great point. And coaches, like, to tell you, Darvish, that you just have to throw three pitches, you know, we're going to simplify your game because you have to master three pitches and that's how we're going to make it easy for you. You're taking away all his inventiveness and what makes him an artist on the mound. As a coach, you have to be comfortable coaching the player you have, not the player you want him to be sometimes. Like, you can't make everybody into one cookie cutter thing, or else you're just going to ruin everybody. And you'll see bad organizations do that. Like, literally, they will just force you into one way of doing things. We like to preach down in the zone. Well, why? Like, what does that do to Garrett Cole and Tyler Glasnow pitching down in the zone? It's not what they're going to do. But yet, you know, they go somewhere else and now they flourish because a coach gets it. So you do 100% agree with that point, that is that you have to take the uniqueness of every pitcher.
Let's take a quick break to talk about our newest sponsor. Whether it's game day or a driveway tailgate, you need propane to get the grilling going. And now it's a cinch. Get propane tanks delivered contact-free right to your front door. No delivery fees, no subscription. And new customers get their first tank exchange for only $10. So break out the brats or burgers, get ready to fire up that grill. Visit cinch.com, enter promo code cinch21 and order online today. Again, that's cinch.com. Use promo code CYNCH21 to get your first tank exchange for only $10. Now, back to the On Fire podcast.
I want to hit on a few other Padres. And again, we're talking the day after Lamet finally gets on the mound in a Cactus League game, and not sure what the progression looks like for him in the coming months as he gets back to being himself. Just curious what you make of that situation. I mean, he was so dynamic last year because of the slider. He went to that well. Often it worked for him, but maybe there's kind of some wear and tear associated with that. Again, just kind of your outlook on that situation with him trying to get back to that form, but what that might look like for him just in terms of trying to stay healthy as well, like making that pitch and that approach sustainable.
Yeah, so I tend to think most pitches are almost equally wear and tear wise on your arm. Like throwing 99, it's going to leave a mark. Like you're redlining your body to do that. So you're, you know, throwing a slider, yeah, potentially, but generally, like they've done studies and it may be barely more wear and tear, but not a lot. It's generally the act of pitching is a lot of wear and tear anyway, because, you know, we're trying to throw as hard as we can. And he's one of those guys. He throws really hard and it makes all his stuff more effective. I love this stuff. I think if anything, that dude is underrated because just people like you all follow him, but I think the rest of the country may be a little behind about how good he was last year and how nasty that. I mean, among sliders, I don't know that there's a better slider. Like you can put others in that category, but his is way, way up there. Like he, shoot, your whole pitching staff's got a bunch of really good stuff. It's not like Blake Snell's is terrible, has a terrible breaking ball. But yeah, I think I'm looking forward to seeing him healthy, seeing what he does in a full season. And I don't see any, who knows? Like it's really hard to read when pitcher injuries is not a thing that I predict, because I used to get into that. Like say, oh, if you have these mechanics or you do this, you're going to be healthy. And then you see people like they were, you know, Verlander, perfect mechanics, had TJ. You know, you have people, Nolan Ryan, perfect mechanics. He tore his UCL too. Like there's no such thing as perfect mechanics. There's perfect mechanics for you maybe that enables you to throw with max velocity or whatever. But I don't see in basketball when you tear your ACL, them saying your running mechanics were all messed up. So in pitching, yeah, it wears out, things happen. I don't know enough about his personal situation to know. All I know is I love watching him pitch and I'm excited to watch him. And I think he is he's got ace stuff. He's a legit, you know, number one pitcher, and y'all should, yeah, enough. Number one pitcher.
Got a few of them, yeah.
You can never have enough number one pitchers. And I'm glad you brought up Nolan Ryan, because he didn't have that issue until he struck out 5,000 hitters and won 300 games and threw God knows how many innings. Everybody's just straight up built in a completely different manner. He was made for it.
Yeah. So but like early in his career, he did have some injuries and they were like, oh, we're going to change you. And instead, he got over him. Like, there was a point where he might have had Tommy John early in his career, but they didn't have such a thing. So he had to, like, recover and improve. I mean, he had his injuries, and he had wildness early in his career. He could have washed out really easily with an organization that didn't have patience, because pitchers develop at different paces. And, you know, that's another thing, to your point earlier, that everybody's different. Taller pitchers develop differently. Randy Johnson didn't have command early in his career. Sandy Koufax didn't. So you have people that grow into stuff that end up getting it that maybe mentally they couldn't take it because they struggled early in their career. And now they're, you know, some pitchers are washed out because of that. because they struggled early in their career and organizations lost faith in them. I think we're getting better at that now, but I think there's still a ways to go.
Isn't it amazing that you got guys, three of the guys I'd love to talk about, Nolan Ryan, Randy Johnson, Sandy Koufax, all of them had control issues. And then something clicked with all of them. And they all said, like, so a coach got to him and said, look at your stuff. Just freaking throw strikes. Don't screw around. Don't nibble. Just pound the strike zone because nobody can hit you. It's amazing how often we see that. I think in today's game too, that's why we see such high pitch counts. Sometimes again, these guys' stuff is so good. I mean, well, the hitters are really good too, but how many times do you want to just grab a guy by the neck and go, just throw strikes. Look at what your ball does naturally. Put in the strike zone, you're going to be fine.
I had talked to Tyler Glasnow about this, and that is the Rays' success. I actually literally just tweeted this. So their success is taking people at unicorn pitches or, you know, dominant stuff, 100-mile-an-hour stuff, and saying, you know what, your other organization was telling you, hit the corners, let's set people up. We're saying, throw it down the middle. Like, just throw it down the middle, challenge the hitters. It's probably not going to end up down the middle. If it does, your stuff's good enough to play. And that's one reason why he says the Rays have been successful is exactly that. So you're right. Like taking Randy Johnson, I'm pretty sure that's what I talked to Tom House about it. And he said that he and Nolan Ryan went over to Randy Johnson and said, look, dude, I mean, you throw the ball down the middle, you're going to be just fine. So just challenge hitters. Don't get into your own head about it being perfect. Your stuff's going to play. But yes, that is one of the things that coaches have to do. And it's a new age type coaching thing because coaches historically have not done that. Like everybody's taught location over stuff. And now you look at the pitchers that are successful. Some have location. I mean, Kyle Hendricks is a location pitcher, and I'm not going to argue ever against that. Greg Maddux, same thing. But you also have guys that are just dominant, right?
You mentioned the Rays, and there's a pretty notable pitcher that came over from the Rays this offseason in Blake Snell. And I heard him talk over the offseason about how he kind of has to remind himself of that and get reacclimated to that approach of just trusting his stuff, throwing strikes, and knowing that it's usually going to work. We obviously know the name, Cy Young winner. We all saw Game 6 and what happened there. But for fans who are listening that might not be super familiar, certainly as familiar with Snell as you, we know he's good. What do we look out for? What should we be excited about when Blake Snell gets his turn every 5 or 6 days?
Number one, his post-game interviews, he's funny as
he's
crap.
Great. Like, he's we were talking so last good. Week. He's the best Padre on Zoom.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Like he's got every bit of that social media stuff kind of figured out, or the gamer stuff that he brings in there. He's hyper competitive, which is awesome. His stuff is just, I mean, it's filthy. He can challenge anybody, curveball, slider, fastball, changeup. He is just really, really a again, y'all have some I'm going to be watching Padres games all year because of the pitchers you guys have. Yeah, you can have some hitters too, I guess. And they're kind of fun to watch too. Like, even as a pitching guy, I got to say, Padres are one of the most flamboyant, fun teams to watch. And, you know, I envy you guys being able to cover them. But yeah, Snell is another one of those aces. Like, I would pitch him in any game you have and just let him hang it out there. I mean, dude is a competitor. You'll love it.
If you were going to offer advice to Chris Paddock to make sure he is the 2019 version and not the majority of 2020 version, what would it be?
You know, that is hard to say. Like, I want him to be himself. Like, I love his personality. I think he is
he's a great guy. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I watch him and he wants to shove the ball down your throat. He wants to be that dude. And I think unlocking that and making sure that he doesn't get too much in his head by, yes, you're going to get beat sometimes. I think it's probably, maybe he doesn't, like, I haven't talked to him, so I don't know. But I think sometimes that mentality, if you pop that bubble a little bit, all of a sudden it spirals. He needs to just be strong and get out there and challenge hitters. Like, I think he's got really good stuff. And I loved his changeup was like, he's good. Like, I think he can be real good. But yeah, that's my thing. I haven't seen anything like physically that gets to me on him. Like, I just think maybe it's a mental thing. I don't know.
we got to let you go here in a second. I wanted to ask you this. If you, you're a pitcher for the Padres, you're out in the mound. You've got
to get shelled is what's going to happen.
You've got a, no, you're not. This is why, because you've got a four pitch mix and it can be four pitches from any Padres pitcher, but you can't just take four Darvish cutters. You know what I mean? You get one from Darvish, but four pitches, thrown by current Padres pitchers, or hey, maybe if you want to go back in time and pull one, but we'll stick to this current staff.
Oh, I was going to go back in time. Can I get like Hoffman's changeup?
Sure,
would that be a legal thing?
Yeah, yeah,
I would take that. I love like Darvish's cutter, so I got to take that. I like the chuckle just for the sake of it's a unique pitch. I've never seen anything like that. When I first saw it, it kind of blew my mind. Snell's curveball, Lamet's slider. Is that, am I doing pretty good? Is that a pretty, like, that's the
you,
mix.
You don't have a fastball in there.
You're not getting shelled.
I would take, if Clevinger's healthy, I would take his, that's a fastball. I would absolutely, live or die. Snell's fastball gets on you. Lamet's fat. Like, you guys have enough. I don't want to choose a fastball over those guys. Like that's tough. But as far as secondary pitches, I think we got it. We got it pretty covered.
Yeah, I think you do all right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling comfortable without throwing a fastball, actually.
Yeah.
But do you throw it from the left or right side?
Both.
I would take obviously Snell from the left side wouldn't be bad, right? I mean, I'll take his fastball.
The chuckle from the left side?
Yeah.
Only if you like winning Cy Young Awards, you know, if that's a thing you're into.
Yeah, I mean, right, exactly. Yeah, the chuckle is something everybody's got to look out for, because I still don't know how you throw that pitch with that velocity, right?
Like, I just don't understand. I wish I was holding a baseball like you. I just don't understand how I could control it.
I don't know how I can control it and throw it above 50 miles an hour. Like, he throws it decently. Like, he's got some velo on it. And it doesn't exactly knuckle, so it's not really a knuckleball. It's got some spin, just lower spin, and makes it. But it dies, so it's fun. Like
that was kind of funny with our friend AJ Cassaville writes for MLB.com. He was talking about the who's going to be the opening day starter, and Jace Tingler said it'd be somebody higher, taller than 6'4". And he looked at it, and it's Darvish is 6'5", Snell is 6'5", Lamet's 6'5", Paddock 6'5", Musgrove 6'5". And Adrian Moore Holmes, 5'11". Shorter pitchers, how do they generate that kind of velocity? Because that's impressive.
It is. And so we talked about Randy Johnson earlier, and Randy Johnson actually said taller pitchers aren't made to pitch. Like, he thought that it was impossible for him to time everything up. So shorter pitchers have like a little bit of the benefit of either athleticism, potentially quick twitch type muscles, and using that. So you can't make them be mechanical typically, because you're taking all that advantage out of them, or thicker rubber bands. You have some guys that are just built really strong that they can use those thick rubber bands, where taller guys have longer levers that maybe takes a while to grow into, and you fine tune it. So it could be it's a combination of things. So that's one reason why why you can find a 5'11 guy that can throw flames. And some 6'10 guys don't. Like, everybody says, well, he's tall, he should throw hard. That's not necessarily true. You have guys that are tall that can't throw hard because they can't time everything up.
Chris Young.
Exactly. That's
the all-star here, yeah.
I was literally picturing him in my head as I was saying that. So he could, like, you think about it, and sometimes you have all these limbs and stuff that it just never, you're just not coordinated enough to sync it up, or it just never happens. And then sometimes it happens over time, like the Randy Johnson thing, where eventually he figures it out, but then things hurt. Like, you have back problems and stuff because you're taller and you're putting strain on different parts of your body. So yeah, this is the beauty of pitching, though, isn't it? Like, you can have a 5'11 guy and you can have a 6'10 guy and Billy Wagner and Randy Johnson on the same team. So you have a short dude who is throwing harder than the tall dude who both threw 100. Like, how does that happen? It's just thicker rubber band, timing everything up. Taller guy ends up using his levers and stuff. So Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is. It is. Last one for me. It's something I've been wondering. Do you have a favorite all-time Padres-related GIF or overlay? Something you were particularly excited to put out into the world, or got a lot of traction or responses from people, or maybe something like the chuckle where you're like,
Well, I mean, that was the chuckle was a blast, because when that happened, everybody on Twitter was wondering what the heck they were looking at. Like, how do you possibly throw a ball like that? I think there was a Tony Gwynn versus Randy Johnson. Like, this is an offensive thing, where Tony Gwynn put a slider in, not only put it in play, but hit a double off it that I thought that it was the perfect pitch. And if you look at it, it was the like, I don't see how anybody ever put this pitch in play. And he was so good that it's one of those, as a pitching guy can sit there and go, there is nothing you can do to get this guy out. Like, that's why he's a Hall of Famer. That's why he's one of the greatest hitters of all time, because he just took one of the best pitches of all time and somehow hit a double off it when he looked terrible. It was a two-strike slider, I think it was. Like, how do you do that? That's not normal. So yeah, that was one of my favorite ones.
Tony Gwynn definitely was not normal.
Yeah, amazing.
Rob, you lived up to the hype. You did it. You did not disappoint. You killed it.
Yes. Go, Rob.
In fact, you want a job? You want to do this every week?
I'm happy to be on whenever y'all like. I will be watching the Padres. If you see if anything comes up during the season, which it will, because it can't not with y'all. Like, I'm happy to discuss when Snell throws a no hitter or Darvish throws a no hitter.
We would love to do that. Just for folks that haven't caught on to Pitching Ninja yet, where can we find your content, podcasts, videos?
So Twitter @ Pitching Ninja, TikTok @ Pitching Ninja,
YouTube Instagram. Pitching Ninja, Instagram
YouTube
Pitching,
is Pitching Ninja. YouTube is Pitching Ninja videos. Like, I don't know why I added the videos part, but it's Pitching Ninja videos. And I think it's Instagram Pitching Ninja too. So yeah. I'm like, not that inventive. Like,
You got a brand. You got a brand. It's working for you. Congrats on all your success. It's been awesome to watch. Really just been a blast following you. And so glad you're able to join us. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.